through 12. If I had to take any one word and tie the whole thought pattern together that Jesus introduces at this part of His sermon on the Sermon on the Mount, the word I would choose would be perspective. And that's all important about life, is what your perspective is. You take age, for example. Like one guy said, it's just, it's a thing of mind over matter. If you don't mind, it doesn't matter. But perspective can make all the difference in life for you and life for others. The other day I was standing in line down at one of the movie theaters, and I kind of have a way, even though I don't know people sometimes around me, listening to their conversation. And these two were talking away, and it was the first night we'd had that kind of cold norther come in, and they were standing there kind of shaking along with the rest of us. And the guy said, "Well, winter's just about here." And she said, "I can't stand it. Cold weather, wind, chapped lips, slick streets, sleet, snow." The guy said, "Well, he said, one good thing about Oklahoma, he said, it doesn't last long. He said, you know, before we know it, summer will be here." She said, "Sunburns, hot weather." You know, I thought to myself, bless her heart, she's too young to be doing like that. In fact, all of us are too young to have that kind of attitude and that kind of perspective on life. Now, you can. You can change, first of all, your perspective. And I've even got better news than that for you this morning. You can change other people's perspective. If you'll get yours straightened out and then model a different kind of perspective, you can help others. I think the classic case of a changed perspective is with that college freshman who went to see her counselor. And she went in and she said, "I've got troubles." And she explained her troubles, and he said, "Indeed, you do have problems." He said, "Now, this isn't unusual. A lot of times freshmen have these kind of problems." He said, "The thing I recommend for you, before you go home, Thanksgiving, you write your parents a letter and try to help them have a better perspective of what this really means. This isn't the end of your life, so write them." And so she did. I have the letter. "Dear Mom and Dad, I'm sorry to be so long in writing again, but my writing paper was lost the night the dormitory was burned down by the demonstrators. I'm out of the hospital now. The doctor says my eyesight should be back to normal sooner or later. The wonderful boy, Bill, who rescued me from the fire, kindly offered to share his little apartment with me until the dorm was rebuilt. He comes from a very nice family. So, Dad, I know you won't be surprised when I tell you that I'm getting married. In fact, you both have always wanted a grandchild, and you'll be glad to know that you're going to be grandparents within 6 months. Love, Terry. P.S. Please disregard the above paragraph in English composition. There was no fire. I haven't been in the hospital. I'm not pregnant. In fact, I don't even have a boyfriend. But I did get a D in French and an F in chemistry. And I wanted to make sure you received the news so you could keep this in proper perspective." One of our members in the church one time, one of his hobbies is growing roses, and he kind of gave me his perspective on life, or I guess other people's perspective. He said, "You know, some people see these, and they look at that, and they'll say, isn't that terrible that rose has thorns all over it? And he said, other people look at it and say, isn't it great that a thorn bush like this can have such a beautiful flower?" The difference is in your perspective. And you can make that difference. And the Christians really ought to have the greatest perspective on all of life. And Jesus, knowing this, right in the midst of this sermon, written, not in the middle really, He's beginning to close it out. And kind of like in rapid fire, in closing out His message, He starts making immediate application and just says, "Here are some things, don't do this. But here are some things I want you to do." And we'll get halfway through the do's and the don'ts this week, pick up on the other half next Sunday morning. Matthew 7, 1. Do not judge, or you're going to be judged. For in the same way you judge others, you'll be judged, and with the same measure you use, it will be measured to you. Why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the two before that's in your own eye? How can you say to your brother, let me take that little speck out of your eye, when all the time you have a two before planted in your own eye? You hypocrite. First take the plank out of your own eye. Then you'll be able to see clearly to remove the speck out of your brother's eye. Do not give to dogs that which is sacred, that which is special. Do not throw your pearls to the pigs. If you do, they'll trample them under your own feet and then turn and tear you to pieces. Ask, and it'll be given you. Seek, and you'll find. Knock, and the door will be opened to you. For everyone who asks receives. He who seeks finds, and to him who knocks, the door will be open. Which of you, if he has a son, ask for bread? And would you give him a stone instead of the bread? Or if your son asks for a fish, would you give him a snake? If you then, though you're evil, know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more does your heavenly Father, who is perfect in love, know how to give gifts to those of his children that ask? In everything you do, do to others as you would have them do unto you. This is really the essence of what the law and the prophets is about. Last March, the Peanut characters kind of put something together that I've been wanting to use, and it's a good place to use it, on perspective. The situation is, Lucy has established her booth, her counseling booth. Psychiatrist help, 10 cents. The doctor's in. Charlie's there in front of it, and she says, life, Charlie Brown, is like a deck chair. Like a what? Have you ever seen a cruise ship? Passengers open up those canvas deck chairs so they can sit in them out there in the sun. Some people place their chairs facing the rear of the ship so they can see where they've been. Others place their chairs and aim them towards the front of the ship so they can see where they're going. On the cruise ship of life, Charlie Brown, which way is your chair facing? Charlie looks somewhat puzzled and then turns and says, you know, I've never even been able to unfold one of those chairs. Now this morning, you already have a perspective. You just may not have realized you've got a perspective. It's probably one that's been given to you by your parents and our society. And it probably needs to be altered. Mine does. I came in here to this message this morning. I'm willing to confess to you that I need to alter my perspective at times in life. So I don't come as one saying I've got it all together. I've got exactly the right perspective. But I do come with you to some good news this morning that I found the one that can give all of us the proper perspective. And that's what I sense that Jesus is trying to do as He closes out this Sermon on the Mount. He closes it with closing remarks about, hey, don't do this. Do this. Let's look at those in a few minutes in the message time, and then move out of here today with a good, healthy perspective. Mike. The 9:30 service were not quite as rushed. I asked them if they wanted to sing some more, and they said they didn't have the time. I don't know why I'm in this kind of mood today. Jesus really says some humorous things when he's trying to help us with this perspective, when you think about it. Can you imagine anybody that'd take pearls and throw them out to swine? We didn't have pigs around our place, but I had some friends that did. And, when you go out and you act like you're going to feed them and you throw something out there and it isn't food, they really do get aggravated and they will turn on you. When you throw something that's really valuable out there, and those swine would run over like they were, they thought that the pearls were food and then they wasn't, they really do get aggravated and they turn on you. You got to be careful how you invest your time and the resources and the truth and all that God's given you. Don't waste it. But it's really funny how he puts that together. And another thing, can you imagine, try to draw in your mind somebody that's got a two before in this eye and is trying to help somebody take a speck of dust out of their own? Jesus is using humor in his message. And the people have to smile and say, that is ridiculous. And then he says, you're a hypocrite. You that are trying to judge, you're just simply a hypocrite. One of the beautiful things that I really like about Jesus, and I wished I could get into my life, but I don't have it in my life, is the way that he could go about life and stay on track and keep a good perspective and have such a great mission. I can sense the greatness in mission, the great opportunities we have. I don't have any problem with that. But to have such a great work ahead, and yet he's got time for what the society would call the nobodies. And it bothers me when somebody says, I'd like to talk to you, or I would have talked to you, but I know you're too busy. And I guess all of us face that. Even in our children, something will happen, I would have talked, but you've been so busy. Or even in communication inside of a family, a brother and a sister. You get so busy about living that you miss out on in-depth relationship in a family. Sometimes you get so busy about getting ready for Christmas that you nearly miss Christmas. You get so busy about cooking the turkey, you nearly get so busy that you forget about Thanksgiving. And giving thanks. It's easy, isn't it, to lose perspective. Now, Jesus said, as you're going about in this thing, don't set yourself up to fail. So one way is don't judge. Now, he's going to come back, and next week we'll look at this verse. He says in verse 15, be careful, be cautious about false prophets. Now, how can I go about and be cautious about the work of some other people not telling the truth about God without judging them? Well, let me pick up on that next week. But it's a fine line in there. But let's just say today, let's just face the fact, he says, do not judge. And one of the reasons he says that is because God didn't make us big enough to judge. Because we cannot see the inside of people. Very seldom do I get angry. I just don't get angry about much. I probably ought to get angry more often. One of the times in the last 3 or 4 years that I have gotten angry was one time when a person faced me off and started telling me my motives. And started saying, you did this and your motive was. And finally, after a few minutes, I said, wait a minute. You're not God. And I'm not going to let you play God. You can't see inside of me. You don't know my motives. That person said, you're right. Then we had a great conversation. Really did. Worked out beautiful. But a lot of times I've done the same thing, I'll read into somebody and I'll say, well, this is the reason, and I'll try to judge them from the inside. I can't do that. Listen, I have a hard time even knowing my own motives, much less somebody else's. I'm even mixed up at times about Charlie's motives. Now, what right would that ever give me then to judge you? I do not have that right, and you don't have that right on my life either. As a person, none of us have the right to be God for anyone else. So be careful. Don't face life with the perspective that you can judge. In essence, be positive and not critical. Let me see if I can explain it this way. I saw a coach do something really beautiful the other day as he was working with a split end. And they call it a seam, or I guess on one corner of the field where the numbers are on the field here at Lewis Stadium, known as the seam, right down through there. And a lot of times a defensive halfback will do what they call play the seam. He'll line up on those numbers and he'll wait and see what that split end is going to do before he responds or reacts. And this coach was saying to the split end, now then, as you go down and go out, drive the defensive man in before you make your cut to the outside. And so the guy lined up, ran through the play, but he didn't do that. He simply ran down to the defensive halfback, and when he got to him, instead of driving him in, he kind of did a little head shake and then went to the outside. Now the coach didn't jump up and down. He didn't run up there in the guy's face and grab his helmet and say, "You stupid guy." He didn't do that. He said to him, while they were setting up and another team was running through it, he pulled him over and I was kind of watching him and listening to him. He said, "Son," he said, "you're doing a lot better on your starts." He said, "You're really coming out of there. You know what worked on a couple of weeks ago?" And he said, "You're getting off the ball a lot better now." And I thought, he wasn't even talking to him about getting off the ball. He's talking about the defensive halfback and what he did, you know. And then he came back and said, "But a while ago when you ran that pattern, you didn't turn that defensive back in enough. Now, this next time when you go out, take a couple more steps and lean a little more to the inside and drive him in. And then after he takes a couple of steps inside, then make your cut to the outside. But you wait and make sure he's moving to the middle of the field, and then you go to the outside of the field." Guy caught it. Now, do you see the difference in the area of being positive? That coach had enough moxie about life not, first of all, to jump onto the kid's character and say he's dumb. He's not. But he had enough moxie to say, "You're doing something right." Now, I want to tell you folks something here this morning. Most of you, no, all of you, if I were a betting man, I'd put money on this. All of you are doing more right than wrong in life. Let me put it another way. All of you are making God smile more than you are frown. And in life, I need to be the kind of encourager, and you do too, and this church needs to be, to find out what's going right in life and say, "Stay with it. Stay with it," and encourage. And we're all going to make mistakes, and when we find mistakes, don't ignore them. But don't make the mistake of thinking that, emphasizing that mistake where you make that person feel like when they fail, they are a failure. They are not. We failed. God knows that. But He made it possible where we don't have to be a failure, and there's a lot of difference, a lot of space in between those two. And one of the places that I guess it's the easiest for us to fall in is that judgment area. And Jesus said, "Do not judge. For one thing, you're not big enough." In fact, the main thing is you're not big enough. You're not capable. You're not God. Another thing, you can never be impartial all the way. Impossible. You've got a background. You've got things that have happened to you. Another thing is you can never know the inside of that person. So just don't do it. Second point in Jesus' message on perspective, He says, watch out how you give your life away. Don't give your life away and throw your life away to things that are useless. Don't put what's valuable, your life, in a pig's pen. Place it where it's worth time and worth the effort that you give. Next, ask. Now this is really goes against the grind in our society today. And there's a point that you can follow this out too far, but I think we're on the verge of following and emphasizing it too far. And we've emphasized our independence. And we need to come back to the church and recognize that we're dependent. than we ought to be. And that's why Jesus says, I want you to ask, I want you to knock, and I want you to seek. You know, a guy named Willie Hussey brought this to light and helped me see this easier, as easy as anyone else. He was on our student cabinet. It was in 1976. I hadn't been here long as pastor, and Willie came by early one Friday morning. He said, Charlie, can I see you just a second? I said, sure. And he said, I've had, I don't know what it is, but, and Willie, when he got excited, would talk kind of fast. And he said, I don't know what it is, but he said, I've had something happen to me. And he said, I guess you can call it a vision or a dream or something. But he said, I just had this dream last night. And I said, wait a minute, Willie. I said, slow down a little, have a seat. You know, he's still standing, have a seat. I said, what'd you eat last night? And he said, well, I had two pizzas. And I said, well, you have a right to have visions and dreams. I thought he had something bad happen to him. It really didn't turn out to be all that bad. I said, well, tell me about it. He says, I dreamed that I died and I went to heaven. He said, do you think that means I'm going to die this week? I said, I doubt it. What else happened when you got to heaven? He said, well, when I got to heaven, he says, I can't remember much about it, but this guy was showing me around all of heaven. And he said, the only thing I remember is what happened right to last. He showed me this room. And he said, in this room was every conceivable thing you can think of. At that time, we were really crammed up for space in our church, and we had about a third less seats than we have in here now. And one of the things we were trying to find out was, how can we expand? And Willie, one of the things he saw was a big church building. So he said, I saw all these things in there, including a 280Z. Willie had always wanted a 280Z. And that wasn't a nightmare. That was really a dream. And so he told me about this, and he said, and then I asked the question, and he said, my dream was finished after the guy answered. I said, well, what is this room about? And the guy showing me around said, this is the room that God's got of His leftovers that He wanted to give away, but His children never asked for them. Our independence sometimes gets us in trouble, not only with God and with others, but ourselves. When we try to lone ranger it, men, women that are married, one of the reasons that God wanted you to get married is to enter into a partnership where you would depend upon each other. The lone ranger style really hurts our marriages. Church membership and responsibility to a local church should cause us to depend upon each other. Life, we should depend upon God and each other. It all has a way of fitting together. Folks, we need God. But we need more than God. It's a slick saying, but it can be a dangerous saying. You and God make a majority. You and God may make a majority, but let me tell you, you need the minority to get along. As I understand God's activity in history, as I read the Old Testament, God doesn't do too many solo acts. You say, all He did with Moses, are you sure? You take one experience out of the life of Moses, and that is not all his life. He had a burning bush experience with the Father. That was kind of a solo act with Moses and God in partnership. But you know, no more had that bush stopped burning than Moses was dealing with the reality, God, I need help. And God gave him Aaron. And he got out on that marching trip and taking those children, and he kept trying to solo it alone, and he was trying to settle all the disputes that were coming up in camp. And he'd spend from daybreak to sunset trying to settle all the arguments. And the father sent a father-in-law along. And the father-in-law had a lot of wisdom. He looked at it and he said, Moses, you're going to die doing this. This is ineffective. Now, why didn't God just strike up another bush and say to Moses, Moses, we've got to plan another system. You've got to get other judges in this to help settle the disputes. Because God, a lot of times, likes to work through people to get His message across. Folks should need each other even to have a godly experience. And we've emphasized the private, personal decision and salvation, to the point that we've acted like after salvation it's just you and God, hunky-dory, and you can do it without people. And I'm here to tell you, I cannot do it, and neither can you, and God didn't make either one of us that way. And for us really to start working together, we've got to make some breakthroughs, and we've got to break through pride and set it aside, and at times say, I need your help, which means that I'm weak, I'm not complete. But that's us, folks. And I guess to practice that, I need to say, and I'm not going to give you details, but in the last month or so, I've gone through an experience in our life where I had to reevaluate because of an opportunity. I chose to reevaluate because of an opportunity that came up. There was a great opportunity to do some other things in my life. And I had to sit down and I said, Marcia, I need your help. I've prayed about this. I don't know what to do. We talked. I talked to the children, Nate and Deborah, about it. I talked to two men in the church family about it, saying, a little confused, don't know what to do. I've done all I know to do, and saying, God, what do you want me to do with my life and this opportunity? And the church family helped me. Folks, we need each other. Let's don't deny that. In fact, your very presence here today, I sure hope, says that. As you go on in this message, he encourages you to act and to seek and to knock. But remember, sometimes when you go seeking and acting and knocking for God, he sends you back to the community of believers to find the answer and find out how he's speaking. And then the last thing he says is an easy principle to understand, not all that easy to do sometimes, but he says, here's how to treat people. Do unto them as you want them to do unto you. And I end the message with three questions. If you were not a Christian, some of you may not be here today, but for those that are believers here today, let's say you're not a believer. What would you want other people to do? You'd say, I tell you what I'd want them to do. I'd want somebody to show me it works. Show me it's making a difference. Don't just tell me about it, but show me. But after you've shown me that it's making a difference, and it's making a difference in your life, then tell me how I can make a difference in my life. Verbalize it. What if I were a new Christian? I need to ask myself that. How would I want others to deal with me if I was a brand new Christian? Well, I'd want them to be kind and gentle because I'm making changes and I'm not all right yet. I'd want them to be understanding. I would want them to tell me how they did it. I'd want them to make it practical. I'd want them to say, look, when I read this, it doesn't make sense to me. How do you make sense out of reading the Bible? And I'd want them to have a seat with me. Last question. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Where are you right now in your life? How can I help you? How can your friends help you? However anybody else could help you be more of what God wants you to be is probably how you can help somebody else be more of what God wants them to be. Start being what people need to be to you, and all of a sudden they start being that to you. You say, I need for people to be friendly. Start being friendly. Everybody needs friends, I think. I need for people to help me. Start helping somebody. I need some purpose in my life. I need some meaning in my life. I need to come and evaluate life. Get close enough people and help them find meaning, purpose, and value. It may happen to you. In fact, it will. That's the way God made it. We need Him and each other. And the way it operates is start doing unto others as you would have them do unto you. My wife about 2 weeks ago, decided one of her Christmas projects would be to make snowflakes by crocheting. And she has these little rings, and then you start crocheting around this ring, and it develops up into a little snowflake about so big. She's going to make that for family and some friends. And so she got started one night, and she had the instructions right there, and she'd get over there, and she'd work a while, and then I'd hear her go, ah. She'd unwind for a while and get the string, then she'd start again. She started on that snowflake I don't know how many times. And she had the instructions, and she'd read them. In fact, she got to the place that when her friends came over that crochet also, she'd ask them, how do you do this? And so her friends would get the instructions out and read them. One of her friends is mature enough that she had a little difficulty reading that, and so I had to take it and read it for her. And so I got involved in reading the instructions. And so I was reading instructions to this friend as the friend was trying to do all this. Boy, I can see why you gals have such a tough time crocheting. That doesn't make sense to me. But anyway, we got to working on that, and we still didn't work it out. Even with my help, they couldn't work it out. It was still a mess. This last Thursday, my wife came to our Hands Abroad program to work, and one of the other ladies took the instructions and said, sure. And just in a few moments, showed Marcia. She didn't tell her. She showed Marcia how to crochet that and showed her the place where she was making the mistake. And Marcia came home, and by Thursday evening, she had her first snowflake made, and she was very proud of it, and she was showing it to the kids and I and saying, look, here's what I made, and here's how it happened and everything. She needed somebody else to help her. Now, God gave her the ability. Somehow, she had the willingness and all the want to, but she needed help. She had to ask. Isn't that why we came here today? Let's confess it. We came here today because we're willing for God to do a work in our lives. And we want help, and we need each other. Now let's be that need-making person to others as they meet our needs. Welcome to the family. We're in experience together called life. And let's unfold our chairs and gain a great perspective and face them towards God. Say, God, I want the best for my life and the best for the community in you. I won't pray about this message. Let's pray together. Father, I thank you that you are concerned about the real deep issues of life, which way we're headed, and about perspective, and keeping balance in life, keeping our eyes and our lives faced in the right direction. And sometimes we get confused about the instructions, what our job might be, our task. Thank you that you made it very clear, make disciples, as we make disciples, to emphasize the ones, not just the many's, but the ones along the way. Thank you that you took time for that woman beside the well. Took time for that leper beside the road. Took time out in history to become man and die for me and for my sins. To die for every individual that's here and their sins. And then to invite us into a relationship with you and with each other that's as big and as thrilling as all of life. In Jesus' name.